This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We will turn you over to the Mariners pregame show coming up at 5:30. Our thanks to Michael Bumpus, who spent the previous hour with us talking some Mariners and Seahawks with him. And M's taking on the Phillies tonight, game one of a three-game series, as we told you. And the T-Mobile Park roof will be closed, is what I'm going to say, Thumb. I think it's going to be closed. He gave us the weather report. What'd you say, 90% chance of rain?
Just close
It's dropping a little bit now, like 70% chance of rain.
I'm just saying it's going to be closed.
It's high.
I'm going to say it's going to be
likely
closed.
Chance of rain.
Well, like, you know, it's funny when we got there and they closed it.
Could rain on us.
Wait, was it open? It was closed.
It was closed when we got there.
They opened it.
Friday when we were out at Edgar's.
Yeah, and this was like around, 1:30 or 2, whatever.
But when they opened it, it was sunny and kind of warm for a bit.
But I thought that they had this fancy weather system that, you know, nobody can get access to except Major League Baseball.
That's what John Morosi said.
That's what we've heard, yeah. And it blew it, apparently.
Yeah.
The system blew.
Well, maybe they knew it was coming in, and they just said, we'll open it for an hour or whatever it was, and we'll close it when it starts, when the system comes through, as those weather people say.
Yeah.
The system, Dave. By the way, that's the Mariners roof report, covered by Acton's Quality Roofing. So, yeah. I'm going to say it's closed.
You know, Rabel used to tell me all the time that that is by far what people listen to the most is the weather. The weather, nightly news broadcast.
Weather,
like that,
traffic.
Weather is because it's something, you know, that's Mother Nature that you can't control, and it's fascinating to people. And, you know, it's like, and it's also like, you know, oh my God, it's going to get hotter. Oh, it's going to be really cold. Or, oh, there's going to be snow. God forbid there be snow and rain. You know, when people can't drive in the rain.
You think it's a popular topic in Arizona or Las Vegas or some, where it's just today real hot.
Yeah.
Tomorrow real hot.
Hot, really hot, scorching.
Don't go outside hot. Yeah. I think people become more interested in weather as they get older because my dad loves to bring it up unsolicited. You don't even have to ask. He'll just tell you, you know, it's 90 in Palm Springs today. Like, we live in Seattle.
Yeah,
but I'm heading out there. It's supposed to be like 91 tomorrow. All right.
Do you remember in the movie Fargo where the sheriff goes to question the guy and he's like, yeah, I was out there at the lake and that didn't sound like too good a deal for
that
guy. And then they look up in the air and they're like, yeah, it's going to be a cold one.
Yeah. He's out there shoveling snow and ice out there. They're all bundled up and it's going to get cold.
Yeah.
Old people like to talk about the weather.
Yes, they do. And have you found yourself increasingly getting more talkative about the weather?
No, the only time I address it is like when I want to ride the motorcycle, when I want to look and see, is it going to rain? Is it going to be cold? Because even if it's comfortable walking around like 57, 56 degrees, you're comfortable out there walking around sunny. As soon as you get on the motorcycle, you get that wind chill, it gets cold.
Yeah.
Your hands and feet get really cold. So needs to be a little bit warmer. But I'm interested in that aspect, not just as a point of conversation to say, hey, see that weather in Vegas the other night? Yeah. 90.
I got to say, the heat is what really bothers me. I don't care about cold. Like when we went to Green Bay, fine, no big deal. I mean, I was down on the field. I got snow in my hair, everything. But the heat, when you're especially, you know, like I've had a couple of weddings where it was June, like at Stanford Church in June, my buddy got married, and I was in his wedding party with a tux on. I was just dripping sweat. It was just awful. Just hated it. Hated it.
But by the way, I have to correct something on the text before we get into the Mariners. The 206 sent in a text. Said, Dave Wyman, total tackles at Stanford, 169.
False.
Dave Wyman, total tackles in the NFL, 553.
True.
Dave Wyman, total tackles at Earl Wooster High School, 5,000.
Absolutely true.
So he says. so
he says.
There was an incorrect number in there, and I know you're saying the 5,000 is accurate, and the 553. Yeah. So total tackles at Stanford.
Actually, 462.
At Stanford. Wow, yeah. This person, the 206, really cheated you.
Well, 173 is a single season. There's a guy named Gordy Saraceno. And Gordy was my hero. And actually, we went into the Stanford Hall of Fame the same year, and I was really excited. I was like fanboy to Gordy Saraceno. But he had Listen to this. I had, you know, I was the second leading tackler in at Stanford all time. I had 462. He had 571. Mm. He had over 100 tackles more. And yeah, so anyway, but yeah, the 5,000 at Earl Wooster High, sure, probably. We were just talking about stats.
So he says
the whole sack thing, and I'm pretty sure they've gone back through because I think they started sacks in 82, I think, counting those. But
I'm not sure.
I'm not quite sure. But we talked to Jacob Green about that one time on this show, and you know, now I'm looking back, and you know, Pro Football Reference has. They must have gone back through, but 115 sacks they have for him.
Because I was telling you that I had, you know, the old-timers telling me, had they counted sacks back in the day, that Deacon Jones would have been the all-time leader, had they counted them.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were ever counted through the entirety of his career. Because his last year was, what'd you say, 74?
Yeah, he was, 74. So yeah. 61 through 74. But, you know, and this also has the numbers. So, you know, I don't know if the NFL did go back and through. And I said earlier, that wouldn't be that hard. Well, yeah, it'd take you a long time.
Consuming.
But I think it would be fun, first of all. But he has 173.5. So,
and what did Bruce Smith end with?
200.
Even?
200 sacks.
Wow. Bruce,
yeah, to me, he's the all-time. He's the all-timer. And I don't think anybody's ever going to touch that stat. But, yeah, Deacon Jones now has 173.5, and I guess that's because they went through and counted him, which I was like, you know, I always thought that was a ridiculous stat. First of all, that they don't keep track of it.
Yeah.
The other thing is
such a huge play.
It is. You know, another play that they used to not keep track of was forced fumbles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems weird. It almost seems like an interception. Like, why wouldn't you count it? You
know? Exactly. So
yeah, big plays, but interesting to see they've gone back and attributed some numbers to Deacon Jones, and I'll assume they're accurate that they went through and watched all the film, and
that was
the number.
Yeah, and that's probably one of those things that was better left like a legend, like it was
probably grew every year.
Because I remember you saying that before, and I was like, "Whoa, that's awesome!"
Yeah,
you were like, "They say Deacon Jones," you know.
That's why I had a bunch of old time players tell me that. Like, you weren't old enough to see him, but I'm telling you, if they counted sacks when he was playing, he would be the all time leader. And I'd read it, and you sort of just take it as fact at that point. Like, yeah, what these guys said.
Yeah,
he's the all time leader. So
but check this out, though. There was twice where he had 22 sacks. And then 21.5 one year, and 19, and then 15. So
now, does it show games played there? Because one of the other things I had heard that he had never missed a game due to injury. I don't remember if that's urban legend or not.
Well, I'm seeing pretty much 14. I mean, that's what they used to.
That was their season.
There's one year in 71 where he had 11.
Okay,
and then 73 he played 12. So it looks like he missed like maybe 5 games.
In 14 years.
That was a tough old dude. Right
man. All right. Getting to the world of the Seattle Mariners, who, again, will be playing host to the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll turn you over to the pregame show coming up here at 5:30. But the story yesterday was, A, it was good that they won. They snap a 6-game losing streak. It was getting rough. It was getting rough on social media, Dave. You should have seen Twitter.
Oh, I can imagine.
And the story isn't so much that they won, because they didn't really produce much. They scored 2 runs in 10 innings. It's not like they lit up the Rays. But you got a stellar debut out of George Kirby, a highly touted prospect, a guy who's got all the potential in the world and all of the hype in the world. We talked to him about that, just sort of the spotlight that comes with being touted as one of the premier prospects in all of baseball. And it was great to see huge support out there for him, bunch of friends and family out there. And here's what his first Major League Baseball strikeout sounded like.
Kirby ready, the windup, and the 3-2 on the way, and a swing and a miss for strike three. And George Kirby strikes out the first batter that he faces in his big league debut. He strikes out Brandon Lau on a 3-2 pitch. So one away, and there's a special K for George Kirby, his first strikeout in the major leagues. Welcome to the show, George Kirby. How about that?
You can hear the excitement in Rick's voice, and I think they threw the ball out after that, saved that ball after the first strikeout. Wander Franco comes up with a base hit, and then Kirby proceeds to strike out the side to end the inning, and here's how that sounded.
And the right-hander's 1-2 pitch to G-Man Choi, and a swing and a miss for strike three, and he did it. George Kirby walks off the diamond, striking out the side here in the top of the first inning in his first big league inning to a standing ovation here at T-Mobile Park. What a start for young George Kirby, and listen to the crowd. George Kirby strikes out Lau, Arozarena, and G-Man Choi, and that's it for Tampa Bay. Way to go, kid.
Beautiful.
What an amazing opener for him. I mean, his very first game, six innings pitched. What was it, 81 pitches?
Yeah.
But the thing I find more and more increasingly fascinating or, you know, just amazing is when the walk count. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single walk. And that just seems like, you know, pitchers can get in so much trouble, but only four hits on the day. So that was so exciting to see that. And, you know, we kind of have, you know, it seems like Logan Gilbert's kind of the pioneer. Like last year, he went through it. And, you know, maybe we'll see Matt Brash up here again. But
out of the bullpen.
Yeah, maybe. And then, you know, let's see if maybe George Kirby finds a rough spot, maybe something happens to him or whatever, you know, we'll see. But they still have another guy left that's in the pipeline.
Oh, Hancock?
Hancock you know, was a, what was he, the number three or four prospect, I think, so in the Mariner system. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty exciting. That's been really something that has been, you know, they've been lacking. And the fact that the rotation is so much better. But yeah, Hancock is their number four. Kirby was three. Got Noelvi Marte at number two. But yeah, Brash was a couple behind Emerson Hancock, or Kirby, I should say, three. And then, you know, you got Levi Stout still. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's some good things to come still with this. And it's just cool hearing George Kirby's name for a couple of years now and where he's ranked in the system and all that. And then this is his debut. This is what you get. It's just fantastic.
It was a good landing spot for him to do it at home, to do it in great weather.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Brash was out there in Chicago. It's not great weather, but he had a great debut. I mean, it wasn't as good as this, but he goes 5 1/3, gives up two runs on four hits, one walk, six strikeouts is Brash's debut. So and he's got electric stuff as well, and we were all very excited. So I'm a little cautious in my celebration of Kirby. I mean, yeah, celebrate the start. He was amazing. Is that who he is every start? Probably not. I mean, he's going to have those rough spots like any veteran pitcher. I mean, we've seen it with Marco this year. You see it with any pitcher every year. There's going to be that game out there where they get lit up, something's not working. They're just, that's when you want them just to grind through. Just give me some innings, keep us in the game. You know, you don't have to strike out every guy. You know, you give up a couple of runs, give us five, hopefully six would be awesome, but give us five innings. Two or three runs, we can manage that. Now, with this offense, that feels like you're kind of buried at that point. If you're down by two or three, you feel like the way this offense has been performing or not performing, that, oh, well, likelihood of them coming back isn't very good right now.
Do you worry about that getting to the pitchers a little bit? Because, you know, I mean, they can only do what they can do. But, yeah, it's been like I was talking about this earlier, and you said it was even worse for Flexen. But Marco, in the last three losses, has received four runs in help from the offense. So,
yeah, he and Flexen both have been devoid of any real run support.
Yeah. So, you know, it gets to you at one point. But I feel like it is going to come around because, again, talked about this in the opening. JP is number seven in Major League Baseball with his batting average at .340. On base percentage, he's number five at .435. And then, you know, you look at Ty France, average number 15 in all of baseball with the .319, and then .385 on base percentage is number 24. So those two guys are consistently hitting. Now they just need to get through. You know, I think I can only sell the bad luck thing for so long. with Winker, we don't really know what he's going to be about. He didn't swing at a lot of pitches outside of the zone, but he's been unlucky. We've heard the same thing about Julio Rodriguez. You know, Kelnick over the weekend, 3-for-8. You know, that was encouraging, but he needs to get going. So, you know, I feel like those are the guys that, you know, you really need it from.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, you know, I just sort of got it in my head after we talked to Blowers, where we were talking about, when do you start, you know, worrying or coming to a conclusion on some of these guys? He's like, man, I don't even think about it till they've had 100 plate appearances or 100 at-bats. Mm-hmm. And now we're at that spot. Not that that's just sort of his measuring stick. It's not official, but it's, you know, you look at Ty France with 116, Frazier 114, Suarez with 103, Winker 102, and Rodriguez 102, Crawford right behind him at 97. Those are at-bats. So, you know, using his metric, using his system, if you will, that's where you start going, okay, yeah, Ty France after 100, looking phenomenal. Frazier, he's picked it up a bit, but you'd still like to see your leadoff guy with a, you know, something above the 317 on base that he's got right now. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's aggressive up there. He's up there hacking. Suarez is a guy who's, you know, he's hitting 204 with a 305 on base. He's leading the team in strikeouts or tied with Julio. That's kind of what his resume said he would be. You know, he's had better average years, you know, 3 years ago. He's always been a power guy with a lot of strikeouts. So far, that's what he is, power guy, a lot of strikeouts right now. And then Winker is the one where I'm having a hard time, because there were times he looked really on it and he was hitting the ball hard and he was just hitting it at people. But at some point you're like, okay, you can only use unlucky for so long.
Yeah.
You gotta find, and he's had a couple of games with multiple hits and you're going, okay, finally hit his first home run recently. All right, he got that out of the way. He's going to start to find it. Things are going to start to happen for him. And it just hasn't gotten there yet. You're looking at him going, okay, he's hitting 196. He's got his on base isn't terrible, 314, but he leads the team with 18 walks, which is great. And we had somebody text in earlier saying, well, isn't that just as good as a hit? Well, in some cases, if the bases are empty, you're leading off, what have you, yeah, you hit a single or you walk, you're on first base. But you need him to come up with a hit when we've got somebody on third or somebody in scoring position in second or third. You need the base hit there. The walk's great. You're keeping the lineup churning, but you're paid to come up there and produce. And in that situation, you want to be able to drive these guys in, and they've left a lot of guys on base. There have been a lot of games where you're going, man, they had traffic all night on the base paths. They just couldn't get that hit to bring them in. And that's where you're looking at somebody like Winker to say, we're counting on you there. You've got the resume that says that's what you do.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, the Blowers number 103 for Eugenio Suarez and Julio Rodriguez, 102. And, yeah, Winker's at over 100 and 102. So you start to – it's time now, right?
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah, and Kelnick, we talked about the home run the other night. The pinch hit home run was electric. That was awesome. The building's packed. Everybody goes ballistic, and you felt like he won the game for him there, essentially, is what it felt like. And then they ended up losing the game, which was unfortunate because that was such a huge moment for him. I thought, okay, this is what gets him going. This is what really gets him rolling, is coming through off the bench, cold, so to speak, just get out there and do it, kid. And I didn't have a lot of faith that anything good was going to happen in that bat, and he crushes the ball. But then, you know, you see since then, he's, you know, three hits in the series. Okay, let's see what you can get done. He was 1-for-4 yesterday. Let's see what he can get done. He was two since that hit. He was one for one, pinch hit. So he's had 7 at-bats. He's 2-for-7 since then. Hopefully he's starting to relax and get it rolling, because you need him.
Bob, I don't think he's going to relax.
You don't think so?
No. I really don't. I mean, I just think this is the way he's going to get it done. He's going to continue to be intense. Like I said out at the ballpark on Friday, I was like, you know, even the root sports things where they're like, you know, reach in the box and identify what's in there, or, you know, do you like mayonnaise, and whatever he answers the questions, he's very intense.
Yeah.
He's not a lighthearted guy, which is fine. I mean, you can be that way, but I just think people are, you know, maybe a little bit quick to judge him because of that. I mean, they would much rather see Julio Rodriguez. Although I would say this, that at some point, you know, if Julio gets in a slump and he's being Julio, people are going to be like, what are you smiling about? You know,
probably.
Why are you so happy?
he's got a ton of slack right now because, A, he steals bases. He's just getting it done. He's playing a good center field. He's getting it done. When he gets on base, he's a problem. Yeah. And he's starting to hit. He's hitting, what, in the 230s at this point, I think. So there's patience with him because you see it. You see it, and he feels approachable. He feels like he's having a good, he's loose. He just feels light.
Right.
So he's going to, I think people are more apt to deal with any sort of slump he goes into. Yeah, maybe they'll scream for him to, hey, you got to drop him in the order, or maybe give him a break, whatever that is. But Kelnick is at the point where you saw him last year, you had the comments about, I know for a fact I could have helped this team the year before. Then last year we saw, he gets sent down, he comes back toward the end of the year, looked like he found it, came up with some big hits. And then for this year, for him to come out of the gate struggling again, you felt like, all right, well, we thought that might carry over from last year, and it didn't. Maybe yeah. This will have some momentum to it, so to speak.
Julio finally got thrown out. He was 9 for 9 at yeah. one point. He's 10-1. What'd you think of the leather strap? It's funny, when they were replaying and I was fast forwarding, I'm like, oh, that strap did touch his foot, but like, no, they can't count that, right?
I don't know the rule. It was just. Yeah,
part of the glove.
That was, I guess, technically, but then you look at it and go, okay, does that mean you're going to have second baseman and shortstops with a big long,
yeah,
a big long leather string coming out of their glove to where they could be a 2 feet away and just kind of do it like a whip? Just, I touched him, he's out. I mean,
yeah, well, and do maybe, you know, like never mind. I was going to say, like, you know, they inspect the gloves after a pitcher comes off. Like,
yeah.
And maybe they'll start inspecting, like, you can only have a 1-inch strap.
Yeah, I just say it feels like it's ridiculous. Opening Pandora's box. Yeah, yeah. That was a little cheap. That felt a little cheap. So we'll see what they do with that. But that was one I'm like, I don't know the rule of this. I don't know this rule here. But that feels like that shouldn't be legal. You shouldn't be out because of that.
No.
Is how I kind of felt about it. But all right, we'll see. We'll see if anything like that happens tonight. Hopefully it's just a one-sided butt kicking. Courtesy of the Mariners is the Phillies.
Yeah, and that way we can stick it to
El Hombre. Yeah, he'll be with us tomorrow, and we'll hopefully be rubbing it in about a beating that's laid on him tonight. We'll see what goes on with Chris Flexen on the Hill. But that does it for us. Thanks to our guests today, Ryan Roland Smith, Michael Bumpus, John Schneider, and George Kirby, all joining us on the program. If you missed any of it, head to the podcast page, seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you every day. Hit subscribe. We're going to be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.